Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Coming up on this episode of White Wine Question Time.
My niece Jodie McNee got me that job. She called me and said, Uncle Les, our director, Prasanna, he's looking for a Liverpool actor to play me dad. Do you know any?
Hello?
When there were 6 cars parked outside my house every day from 6 a.m. until 6 p.m, there were press bouncing off cars. It was a crazy, crazy time, and I thought, did I murder somebody? No, my marriage is in trouble. It's getting frustrating now because I've done it so often, and people go, what, you're in a musical? I've done 15 musicals. It means, obviously, as you say, people think, he's going to be crap in that.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine. And my guest this week is a man who's been a part of the rich tapestry of our stage and small screen history for over 50 years now. Born in 1950s working-class Liverpool, he went to the same school as Paul McCartney and John Lennon. But far more interesting to him was the fact that veteran comedian Jimmy Tarbuck had also been a pupil at the same school. He wanted to be Jimmy Tarbuck, the fifth and funniest Beatle. And so he built an act as a teenager, with mainly impressions, performing on talent shows like Opportunity Knocks while he was still at school and honing his skills on the working men's club circuit in the north of England, which ultimately led to an invitation to join TV show Russ Abbott's Madhouse, where he met his double act partner, Dustin G. And at the height of their success in the 80s, they were quite simply the Anton Deck of their day. He went on to host Family Fortunes for 16 years, by which time he'd already married his childhood sweetheart, Lynn, and become a father to his eldest child, Philip. When their marriage ended after 16 years, he went on to marry Amanda Holden for 7 years, before their divorce played out in a blaze of headlines, and he found himself living through very difficult times, all the while starring in Chicago, doing 8 shows a week in the West End, trying to re-pivot his career, this time as an actor. And it's as an actor that he's having a brilliant third professional chapter. Now he's starring in the West End run of 42nd Street. He is honestly, as you're about to discover, just one of the nicest men you could hope to spend an hour with. So let's do it, shall we? Let's dial him up. It's Les Dennis.
Hello.
Hiya, Les. How you doing?
I've done a lot, haven't I?
You have done a lot. Is it over 50 years, Les?
It's crazy.
Really? Is it over 50 years since you've been working?
52 years. I did opportunity knock you mentioned there, that I go back to that as my first gig. It was my first telly gig in 1971. I'd started doing the clubs while I was still at school before that, but I go back. I'm counting it as 52 years since Op Nox.
Jeez. Yeah. What a lot you've done. And do you know what? I'm loving watching you now in this kind of, I call it your third chapter. Yeah. You're still an incredibly funny man. I'm sure if it was just you on stage with the mic, you could click back into Les chapter one quite quickly and easily. But actually, you're really stretching your legs now, aren't you, at this stage of your career?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I would find it quite scary to go back to chapter one, to go back to being on stage on my own. I was going to, when I got to 50 years, I was going to do, but and that coincided with the pandemic, I was going to do a one-man show, a kind of retrospective and look back at my career. And that didn't happen. But maybe I'll get back to that. But I prefer being part of a company. It's much more fulfilling for me right now.
But I mean, listen, you heard, of course you've heard what I've just said because you've lived what I've just said. But did you imagine at that time that you got the call from Ricky Gervais to say, yeah, you're doing Chicago, your life's falling down around your ears a little at the moment. What about coming and playing a sort of spoofed version of yourself? Did you think that that would seriously open up the opportunity to work for the RSC, to be called up by the English National Opera? I mean, Les, you've really stretched where you've gone.
I know. When Ricky called, I mean, literally, I'd just come out of the Big Brother house and the phone wasn't, you know, I mean, I went in thinking that I was going to get a reboot. Everybody says they go into the Big Brother house or a show like that for charity or whatever. And certainly, you know, at that time, there was no fee when we were doing those. There was no fee. So, you know, you say, oh, I'm going in for charity, but I was going in to try and kickstart again because family fortunes had ended. I decided to leave it because it had gone to a daytime slot and I left it because of money, to be honest. They offered an insultingly 98% pay cut. So, time to go at the right time while it's still a great show. The phone wasn't ringing, so until Ricky Gervais called and offered me, as you say, the twisted, demented version of myself in it. And a lot of friends said, don't do it, Les. You know, they're just taking the mickey. And they weren't. He was giving me the chance to show that I had a sense of humour about being called Les Miserables. So, who would have known that would then lead to a reinvention and to, well, the English National Opera, that was great to do. And the RSC was always something that I wanted to do. I'd been to Stratford when I was 17 with the school and I'd seen an actor called Emrys James play Feste. I still haven't done Shakespeare. That's still something I want to do. But it was a great, great experience to work at the RSC. And that was down to my niece. My niece Jodie McNee got me that job. She was playing Belvedere in Venice Preserved. And she called me and said, Uncle Les, our director, Prasanna, he's looking for a Liverpool actor to play me dad. Do you know any?
You're like that. Hello?
No, it's me. I met Prasanna and got the role of playing this twisted, again, really evil Venetian senator in Venice Reserved. I had a great time. And they are, yeah, they're steps that have taken me away from the Jimmy Tarbuck years. years.
Well, that takes me really nicely into my first question for you, Les. Are you ready?
Yes.
The word blindsided popped up quite a lot as I was researching you. In as much as, oh, Les Dennis, blindsided audiences. He, you know, people were expecting you to be, frankly, a bit crap. And, you know, it was like Les Dennis of Family Fortunes, you know, Les Dennis from Russ Abbott's Madhouse. And there you were able to absolutely razzle-dazzle, you know. So I wondered, what's been the benefit of being blindsided by the opportunities that have come along when you least expected them, Les? And what were those opportunities?
Yeah, blindsided is one word, and the other word that comes up a lot is a revelation. And Denise Welsh and I always we call each other up, and she's, you know, when she does a straight play, people don't expect that she's such a good actor. And she always says, were you a revelation again, Les? Yes, I was a revelation. Were you, Denise? Yeah. So it's nice to, it's kind of, I feel like it's a card up my sleeve that people don't expect it. So, but it's getting frustrating now because I've done it so often and people go, what, you're in a musical? I've done 15 musicals. I'm a lot in Legally Blonde, in Hairspray. And so me and my girl, the first one I ever did. So it's always, it's getting frustration that I'm still blindsiding and then I'm the revelation. It means, obviously, as you say, people think, he's going to be crap in that. So it's, in many ways, it's frustrating. But then again, when you get the offer like the ENO to play Sir Joseph Porter at the English National Opera and sing with these beautiful, wonderful opera singers, and to be saying toy, toy, toy instead of break a leg. That's what they say in opera world.
Oh, is that right?
So it's toy, toy, toy to you, Tim. It's to have that wonderful, unexpected joy, you know. I'm things I've been in this business so long now that I always want to be challenged. If I'm doing something, I want to do something that people don't expect from me, and they certainly didn't expect me to go into 42nd Street, which is a big tap musical. But
how's that going, Les, as you approach your 70th birthday? All right.
With a new knee, it's been quite a challenge. But I learned to tap for me and my girl, so I can do the odd time step.
I mean, no pressure, but you're performing with Adam Garcia, who's like, you know, a dance judge on shows. He's that good. And Ruthie Henshaw, who also knows her way around a tap shoe.
He's wonderful. And he doesn't tap in this show until the very end because he plays Julian Marsh, the autocratic, really hard-bitten Broadway director. And so he's the one that gets Peggy Sawyer. The show is about a show within a show. It's Pretty Lady. We're putting on the musical Pretty Lady. Myself and Josefina Gabrielle play the two writers, Barry and Jones, and Dorothy Brock is the old school Broadway star. She breaks her ankle on stage, and the young ingenue, played by Nicole Lily Basden, who's brilliant, takes over from Ruthie in that role. And it's a wonderful show, but Adam, as I say, taps at the end, and the audience are relieved, and it's a joy to see him do it.
Yeah, I bet they're holding their breath, kind of waiting for that, because that man is quite the sensation on two feet, isn't he?
Great, and he's a lovely guy as well.
You know,
I was hoping, you know, you always think, I love and respect this guy. I hope he's a nice guy, and he is. And Ruthie is a lovely woman. We've had a great time, really great time.
So, I mean, you're right. When we traced back earlier in our chat, the fact that these opportunities came about because you took a risk, right? A risk at the invitation of Ricky Gervais at a time when you didn't really know where you were going. I guess you were a crossroads.
I was at crossroads, in every way. I'd come out of the Big Brother house. The phone wasn't ringing. You know, my marriage was coming to an end. It was. I didn't know where I was, what I was doing. And I was when the call came from my agent saying Ricky Gervais wants you to call him, I was going around looking for a new house. So I was really at a massive crossroads in life, you know. And it suddenly, I thought, no, it's not. It won't be Ricky. It'll be John Culshaw having a laugh.
Yeah. Not now, John. I'm not in a good place.
When I heard that massive laugh of his when he came on the phone, and I thought, well, it is him. And he said, come in and meet us. And it was a great... I think I heard your episode with Hannah Waddingham, and again, She was knocking on the door for so many years. She was a triple threat in theatre, and then suddenly Ted Lasso has been just shown how beautiful and wonderful a talent she is. It was that chance again. It was just something from nowhere. It blindsided me, whereas I might blindside other people. It blindsided me to get that opportunity.
She had Jason Sudeikis and you had Ricky Gervais. And it's people that make you, that force audiences to sit up and pay attention to you. That's what it does. They don't make you good. They just make you available to audiences to make their own mind up. And you take it from there. And from that moment on, Les, you really haven't looked back. I mean, just this part of your career alone would be enough for most people. But you'd already had 16 years as Mr. Saturday Night. And then you've got all the stand-up, all the comedy, all the stuff with Dustin in the 80s. Where, I mean, at one point, you and Dustin were on Saturday and Sunday night telly when there was only three channels in the country. I mean, your exposure to audiences... You were Anton Deck, but probably bigger.
It was his heavenly birthday the other day. He would have been 81. I mean, the
ridiculously young
that he had that hadn't been exposed to audiences. It's a shame that we didn't see that. And who knows whether we'd be together now or whether we would be doing separate things. But I know that we still would be a force as friends. You know, he was the loveliest, loveliest man. He came into my life at a time that I was a rookie comic. I was, you know, pursuing the Jimmy Tarbuck dream in Panto, in Summer Seasons with Russ Abbott. And Dustin came along when he was already a star. He was already finished in the club world as somebody who could fill a club for a week, you know, without any TV exposure. And he came along and wanted to join up with me in a double act. It was incredible. It was a great gift and a great. I miss him to this day. He was a wonderful inspiration, and he left me with a legacy. He left me with a TV career that he had given me. You know, I know it sounds like, oh, but, you know, he came along when, in Panto, for instance, we were doing Panto together with Russ Abbott, and his billing was Dustin G and Les Dennis, and we were teamed together as the...
So he was the headline, he had the bigger font. You were almost special guest or with. You were with Les Dennis.
And he went along to our then manager and said, I don't agree with this and I want parity of pay. I'm getting double Les's wage and I want to share that wage. So that was so generous and so unusual. And he also said...
No one does that anymore, do they, Les? People do, I hope. But that is huge generous. The thing is, there's nothing in it for him. So much in it for you. That's somebody that really cares.
And he also said, Les Dennis and Dustin G sounds better than Dustin G and Les Dennis. Let's change it round.
So he's right.
Yeah, it does. It comes to work better.
Wow. Yeah. So you're probably quite blindsided, I would imagine, by his generosity.
Yeah, blindsided by his generosity, certainly by his amazing talent. You know, I used to be sometimes on stage watching him create impressions he was great with props, Dustin. He could put in a set of teeth. He loved kind of going to the dentist and getting teeth for different characters. He could put in teeth, put on a pair of glasses, slick his hair down, and Larry Grayson was in front of you. Or he could put on a cowboy hat and pull a face and Robert Mitchum was there in front of you. And I had to do I just did little impressions. I felt like it was a boxing match with Dustin and me. He'd go for the knockout and I'd go for the jabs, you know, the little jabs, the little impressions. Like, oh, Johnny.
You were Scrappy-Doo to his Scooby-Doo.
I was, absolutely. Scrappy-Doo. Yeah, we would have done that. We would have ended up doing those two.
You should have. Well, had things been different, yeah.
We put people you wouldn't expect together, like Larry Grayson and Boy George, like Billy Connolly and Bobby Ball. Even Vera and Mavis that we did weren't friends in Coronation Street. Vera was Ivy's mate. in the factory, and Mavis, of course, was with Rita. So to put Vera and Mavis together was an odd couple. We were an odd couple of and nobody had done it before. There'd never been an impressionist double act before.
Yeah. But
it was like you say, I was blindsided, and then suddenly the rug was pulled from underneath when he died so unexpectedly and so tragically.
And you went back to work that day, that night, the next day? I can't remember which.
I was persuaded to go back to work. Yeah, it was crazy. I call my autobiography "Must the Show Go On?" because with hindsight, I now won't do that. I would say now, sorry, you've got an understudy, put somebody on instead of me. But at that time, we were always told the show must go on. And I was convinced that I should go back on in Panto the next day with the lovely, and, you know, he was a great talent, Jim Bowen. But it was, you know, it was the wrong time for me to do that. But I just got on with it, you know, crazy.
Well, fortunately, times have changed.
Yeah.
Before we move on from this, can I just pick up on a night where you were slightly blindsided by the woman who was to become the most recent Mrs. Heseltine, your lovely Claire. Claire in the community, as she's known to her friends. Such is her efficiency and organisation. She says, of the night she met you, "My friends had dragged me to a charity event in London, and halfway through the evening, I fancied a boogie. I looked around, and there was Les Dennis on the next table. I thought, what's the worst that can happen? He can only say no. Les was obviously nervous while we danced, but I thanked him and we sat back down at our separate tables. My friends had managed to get hold of a picture of us on the dance floor, so I went over to him, tapped him on the shoulder and showed it to him. He thought I wanted his autograph and signed it, 'To Claire, best wishes, Les Dennis.'"
The first photo of me and Claire on the dance floor. And remember, you know, at that time, whenever anybody took a photo of me with a woman, they had me down the aisle, you know.
Yeah.
It was all over the tabloids. So I was thinking, oh, no, this is going to be everywhere. But it was actually an in-house photographer, so it didn't go anywhere. But I went into default mode and said, would you like me to sign it? So the first photo of me and Claire, we're holding each other in this dance pose, and across her arm it says, "Best wishes to Claire, best wishes to Dennis." So... But then I recovered from that and said, would you like to go to dinner? And thankfully she said yes. She wasn't put off by the scrawl across her arm at that point. We went to dinner, and she's been great for me. She's been absolutely, you know, like you say, Claire in the community. Do you remember we were both at Lisa Maxwell's wedding, and Claire went up and sorted out sound. I was like, what? Not right. Do the sounds. I'm going to go up. But you can't. You don't know anything about it. I'm going to talk to somebody who can sort it. You're doing speeches and the sound's not right. I was like, oh, please, not now.
She is so efficient. It's like she walks through life with an imaginary clipboard. And of course, at that wedding, as best man, was Adam Garcia.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm going to remind him of that, but we have met.
Yeah. Did you not realise?
No, I'd forgotten, you know, that I probably was too worried about my wife showing everybody, you know. I was like, stop it now.
So, teaching all the sound grandmothers to suck eggs. well, I'm glad that Claire came and blindsided you one way or another. But I do love the fact that you tried to sign an autograph at picture. It's so unsexy, but it did the job, Les. Did the job. So you've got Philip, who's 43.
Yeah.
You've got Tom, who's 12, and you've got Ella, who's 15, yeah?
Ellie's 15.
Ellie's 15.
Yeah.
That's quite you've been doing a lot of school runs for a lot of years.
See why I work so much. I come to work for a rest. Yeah, still school runs. Even when I'm doing a show like this and I go home, usually it's on a Sunday night because we have a Sunday matinee. I make sure I get up the next day and do the school run there and back, you know. But although yesterday Tom was like, he said to Claire, he said, "Is it my imagination or did I see Dad for a nanosecond today?" because I then took Ellie to her work experience in Liverpool. So I legged it to Liverpool yesterday and then made sure I was there and stayed with my sister Marg and Ellie and got her settled in with a work experience week in a theatre. So, yeah, I love being with my kids, and I thank Claire for the gift that she's given me with them. It was really funny when I did a play called Certified Male, and in the play, my character rings his wife and says, "Yeah, I went to Baby Gap because he's got a chance again. He's got another kid. I went to get Baby Gap and I got a blue one and a pink one just in case." And when Claire came to see the play during the run, of course, and she that night she gave me a box and I opened it and it's a Baby Gap, and I went, "What's this?" She said, "I got you a blue one and a pink one just in case," and I went, "Don't tempt fate. Oh my God, really?" And that was her way of telling me that she was pregnant. And it was so moving and so touching to get that, for the art to imitate
to imitate life. And yeah. Oh, Les, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Was it something that you were thinking? I mean, had you thought you'd like another chance at parenting? Because I know when Philip was little, you were in the eye of your career storm. You were so busy. You can't have been as present as you have been this time around necessarily.
No, that's right. Absolutely. You know, Philip's birthday is the 22nd of December. So I was always in pantomime. I always rushed home to see him, you know, give him his birthday present, but then always had to leg back to Nottingham or, you know, wherever I was in panto. And yeah, then they of course would come down for the school holidays. But yeah, I wasn't as present as I would like to have been. Yeah.
Yeah. But how lovely that, I mean, Claire's still blindsiding you, right? She turns up, you're doing a play. Here's a box.
Here's
pick
a box.
Two flavours.
Don't tempt fate. Oh, really? Oh, I see.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Right, your next question, Les.
Yeah.
I want you to imagine that you are a casting director. And you are casting and putting together the central cast for the story of Les Dennis.
Right.
Who are the characters
that
we need to cast? The seminal players, the ones that got you sat here today, backstage in your dressing room at Sadler's Wells.
Well, we'd have to... My mum and dad would have to be major in that. My dad kind of not thinking that... a working class kid could be in show business. Don't be bloody stupid. Get a bloody proper job. He was lovely, but he didn't believe it could happen. So who would play my dad? Gosh, this is tough, isn't it? It would have to be a working class actor. I think I'd have Stephen Graham as my dad.
Oh, that's a nice one. You know? I hope your dad wouldn't be offended. Ricky Tomlinson, maybe.
Ricky Tomlinson, that's a good choice. Yeah, Ricky Tomlinson would be good. And my mum, well, actually, Sue Johnson would be great as my mum. My mum was the one that believed and the one that pushed me. She had her chance when she was younger. She had gone along to the Empire Theatre in Liverpool. There used to be a guy who was the first Huey Green or Simon Cowell of his day, called Carol Levis, Carol Levis Discoveries. And my mum went backstage when Carol Levis was auditioning, and she sneaked, somehow she got backstage at the Empire, and she went back and she was shouting, paging Carol Levis, paging Carol Levis, which was what, on the radio show, that's how his show opened. And Carol Levis came out of his dressing room. And my mum was 14. And a young lady.
Sassy.
And she said, I'm sorry, Mr. Levis. He said, if you've got the talent to match your cheek, I'll audition you tomorrow afternoon. And my mum ran all the way home, 3 miles to Garston, and said to her mum, Carol Levis, I've got an audition with Carol Levis tomorrow. And she said, her mum said, no, you know, you start in the Bobbins Works tomorrow. She was working.
The Bobbins Works being the factory, yeah?
Yeah, in Liverpool. And that was the Bobbins was my mum's first job, and she didn't get the chance to do what she wanted. But she saw in me that I wanted to do it. And she... Yeah. Wasn't a showbiz mother, you know, don't put your daughter on the stage, Mrs. Worthington. She wasn't that kind of pushy showbiz mum. She was somebody who just encouraged me and nudged me towards it. So Sue Johnson would be good as my mum.
She would, wouldn't she? And what a lovely lady as well. Yeah. What about your sisters? I mean, were your sisters a big part of who you went on to become?
Marg, my sister Marg has become, you know, my mum died quite young. My mum died at 51.
So young, Les. That's so young. What took her at such a young age?
Lung cancer.
I'm so sorry.
And she worked in a factory all her life. She worked, you know, she worked hard to get us moving forwards. We were in this Chesterton Street in Garston, a 2 up 2 down, and she got us into Childwall, which was very posh. Childwall is where Brookside is filmed, or was filmed,
and now
filmed. So Childwall was a big move up, but she got us into a council house, but she got us moved up to there, and then my mum and dad bought that council house. So she was,
which we must never lose sight of, right? For working class folk like you and I, right, coming from that background, to buy your own home was really something. You know, you were upwardly mobile. You transitioned into the lower middle classes. Not that it was about climbing class walls. It was about having something that was yours that you could pass down, that wasn't just a rent book with somebody's name on it.
No, exactly. And my mum was always one who wanted that, you know. Mm. She wanted that for us, and she saw, you know, that I could move forwards as an entertainer. So she pushed for us. But when she died, my sister Marg has become that powerful matriarchal figure in our. I think we're a family where the women are the strong ones. You know, the ones that.
Well, you were slightly outnumbered, Les, weren't you?
We're outnumbered. Yeah.
You and your dad versus how many?
Well, there was my my sister Marg and Mandy, and there was me and our Ken. So we were even,
oh, right.
But in strength it was the women that pushed. Yeah. So our Marg, that would be a good one. Yeah, when she was younger, maybe Jodie Comer.
Yeah.
Or
nice.
Who'd play Armagh? My niece Jodie would play. Because my niece is a massive talent, Jodie McNee. She's done leads at the RSC, at the National. She's more of a stage actor than she is a telly actor, but she's brilliant. So we give Jodie a big break. She's done films. She was in Judy, playing Judy Garland's makeup artist, and Film Stars Don't...
Is that the Helena Bonham Carter version? Is that what you're talking about?
No, the Judy Garland film with Renée Zellweger.
Blimey! The girl's done good!
Yeah, she's done good, yeah. So she could... It would be nice to keep it in the family, wouldn't it? You see, if my mum had been around when I was at the RSC playing my niece's father on the stage of the RSC, she would have been so thrilled to see that. So let's have Jodie as Armagh.
Armagh, lovely. Who else are the key players that have got you to where you are? Those that, I mean, obviously we've discussed Dustin, but he came into your world because somebody had already set you on a path in terms of taking you on. Who was it that gave you the first big booking or first big agent that showed you some love?
I suppose, Mike Hughes was quite big. Mike Hughes was in Liverpool at the time. He was the biggest showbiz agent. He had all the TV comedians and he had Freddie Starr at the time. So he was a massive agent and in Liverpool, and he was getting bigger in the industry generally. He had then had Russ Abbott. So Mike was a big influence in my career. I was with him for 27 years. So he would have to feature. He had a strange look of Brian Ferry.
Did he?
But certainly not the dress sense of Brian Ferry. First time I met him, he was in a red sweater, red trousers, red shoes. You could say he was coordinated in a very unimaginative way. But yeah, he's been a big influence. You know, I'm not with him any longer because he saw that I wanted to go a different way and he let me go a different way.
So you parted company after 27 years.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a tough one, isn't it?
But still remained friends after that, yeah.
That's nice. And weirdly, I mean, God, life is sometimes strange in the way it serves up, the way things play out, Les. But Mike's son, Chris, then went on to marry your ex-wife, Amanda Holden.
Yeah, there was... it's funny, I tell this story in my book that when Mike became my manager in, 1973... and Lynn and I were about to get married, my first wife, Lynn. We were excited that Mike had become my manager. And she said, let's drive past his house because he lived on Queen's Drive in Liverpool.
Is that a fancy address, yeah?
It was a lovely, lovely big detached house on the main kind of ring road in Liverpool. So it had a lot of traffic through it, but it was a nice house. So we passed, and the curtains were open, and I went, "Look, there he is!" And we saw Mike Hughes picking up a little child and swinging the child round. And Lynn, later, after a lot of things had happened in my life, she said to me, she said, just think, if we'd known then that somebody had tapped on our shoulders as we were sat in the front of the car that I was driving, a Morris Marina, she said, imagine if somebody had said to us then, you two are going to marry next year, but your marriage won't last, and you, Les, will marry a younger woman who will one day then marry the child that has been swung round in that room.
By your new agent.
which did happen. I mean, incredible of Lynn to be able to talk to me like that, yeah. You know, that all those years later. You just don't know what your life is going to throw at you, do you?
No, you don't. But in that moment, there and then, you were starting out on you're about to become a married man. You and Lynn starting married life together. Your career was taking a big hit in terms of elevation because this guy had taken you on, big talent manager, you know. And you're right. You just don't know what's down the road, do you?
Don't know. Not at all.
Who else would be featured in your central cast, Les?
Well, it would have to be Claire. Claire would have to be there because, you know, to get what I've got this later in my life, you know, to get this wonderful new beginning in family life as well as my career is I mean, it's she never ever says you can't do that because I just did a play at Bolton Rep. And, you know, it was 250 quid a week. She wouldn't say to me, you can't do that because we can't afford it. She'd say, do it. You know, if it's going to stretch you, do it. And it was Spring and Port Wine, a brilliant 60s drama, where again, I blindsided.
Were you revelation, Les?
Apparently, in The Guardian, it was an indelible performance. I had to look up indelible. So, you will never say no, sorry, you, we need you around or whatever, don't, you can't do that. She will always encourage me to play and to take those chances.
And did it feed the soul if it didn't feed your bellies, Les? That's the question.
Sometimes you need to feed your soul as well. Yeah,
you do, and then you can go and earn the big bucks in the West End.
Yeah, and then she will be doing, you know, when I'm away on tour, she's kind of single mum for a while. She has to be, but it's the way. And I say, I'm so sorry. She says, it's what you've always done, and we will make it work. You know, whenever I'm away, the school holidays, she will make sure that they come for the whole of the Sooks. When they came, they had a summer in Stratford, which is a wonderful summer for them to have. So they get to visit and see this world and love it. Yeah. They love it, clearly, because Ellen has gone to do work experience in a theatre in Liverpool.
Yeah, she's at the Royal Court there, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. Yeah, yeah.
That's incredible. So she's obviously got... I mean, Philip's not shown any signs of wanting to go into the business now?
Philip did He's had little dealings with it and still does. He's in a couple of low-budget films right now. And
he's an actor?
But he does it when the chance comes up, but he also works really hard as a landscaper right now. And,
good man.
Yeah,
good
proper
man.
Job.
Proper job. So who's going to play Claire? This is very key casting, by the way. She will be listening. You know she will.
Oh, right. OK, who will play Claire? Well, you know what? People always said, who's the girl who played Wonder Woman?
Linda Carter.
Linda Carter. Let's have Linda Carter.
Linda Carter. That's a nice one.
And play Claire.
OK. But who else are your must-haves, your couldn't-have-done-it-without-yous?
Well, I suppose Amanda would have to be there. You know, it's a chapter in my life that was huge. I have no idea who to cast in that role.
I think she could probably pull that one off herself.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
And who's going to play you, Les, most importantly? Who's going to play you?
Well, it would have been Keith Chegwin if he'd still been around. Bless him. I love Cheggers. Loved him.
Nice man.
Who would play me? I don't know. Jason Watkins.
Oh, yes. Also an excellent... Looks a bit like you, Les.
Well, you know what? He recently direct messaged me about something. We started following each other and he said, oh, let's hope we get to play brothers one day. So
That would be great. Jason Watkins is a great call.
It's a good call, isn't it?
Yeah. Unbelievable. Right, final question. Are you ready?
I wish I was swigging white wine for this.
So do I, but you've got a show tonight and lines to not only learn and remember, but actually get out. I wanted to drill into the expression, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And yeah. I wonder when and how that's been true for you, because I think sometimes we have to do difficult things or go through uncomfortable periods in our lives to become a better person, to live ultimately a better life. So when has that been the case for you over your almost 70 years?
Gosh, you know what? I love that that phrase, and it did come up a lot when when I was at the height of the storm with marriage, with press attention. I was hacked for 9 years. I was, found out when we looked into it that I was, there was a people hacking me for 9 years, and I was then.
Which really does knock you off your feet, doesn't it? Because suddenly you have to roll back over those 9 years and unpick the paranoia, the friendships that you cut, the relationships that you froze and walked away from.
Because you were always told a close friend says. You when you read things about yourself and you thought, no, I didn't
know that.
And it's always a close friend says, and that was how they masqueraded what they were doing by hacking, by getting into your voicemails. That's how they did it. They didn't hack your phone. They used to apparently they would have two phones and they would phone you, and while you were answering, they'd then with the second phone and get you into your voicemail, because at a time when
it wasn't even while you were answering, they just tied that line up so that ultimately when they made the call on the second device, it went straight to voicemail, and then they would just take a guess at what your phone password or passcode could be, and then bang, they're in. I mean, you're right. I mean, listen, I had it as well, right? 9 years, it's a long time. I echo every one of those years, Les. And,
people say, oh, well, it's something you asked for. It isn't something we asked for, and it was intrusive, and it was hard to deal with. So, that phrase, it was Nietzsche, wasn't it? Was it Nietzsche that said that?
Yeah, I think
so. Makes you stronger.
Is a
great one. But the one that I cling to is the opening line from the book The Go-Between. The past is a foreign country. They do things differently there. What? That was then. This is now. And I look forwards rather than trying to look back. But when I do look back, and I can say, well, it didn't kill me and it made me stronger. So,
yeah. And I think often the fear of what could go wrong is often worse than when it does go wrong. Because when it does go wrong, you have no choice. You can't lay awake at night fretting about what's, ifs and maybes. You've just got to get on with getting through, right? And I think sometimes that is the bit where the strength comes, because you're not dead. It didn't kill you.
No.
And, you have to pick yourself up. Sometimes it's nigh on impossible, depending on what your experience. But ultimately, I think that's where we extract value from life, because that's where we learn.
Yes, it is where we learn. Absolutely, yeah. And I do feel stronger. Sometimes you look back and think that what did I do when there were six cars parked outside my house every day from 6 a.m. until 6 p.m, and when I was going to be in Chicago playing the cuckolded husband, and there were press bouncing off cars. It was a crazy time. It was a crazy, crazy time. And I thought, did I murder somebody? No, my marriage is in trouble. But it was at a time when the press were fascinated with it was, and it was out of proportion,
Yeah. And in places we know that there was illegal news gathering taking place on an almost daily basis around characters like yourself.
Yeah.
So that's not easy to live with. But I think, prior to that, Les, you'd also had to find huge resolve, be it as a young kid that dies on stage and has to keep going, be it as the young man that finds the right comedy partner, and for 2.5 years you two fly high, and then he drops dead.
Yeah,
you know, those moments must have required huge resolve for you.
They did, absolutely. You know, Dustin was living, he knew he was on borrowed time. He had a condition called cardiomyopathy, which is enlarged heart muscle. And he lived his life, you know, in those last 2.5 years when we were together, he lived it absolutely to the fullest and enjoyed it and didn't want to give up, didn't want to slow down. And he actually, we were there when Tommy Cooper died, and we were there. I remember I went for dinner with Dustin and Nina Mishkoff afterwards, and we were all in shock. And Dustin said, "That's the way I want to go. I want to die with my boots on." And then 2 years later, he collapsed in backstage in pantomime. He'd come off stage. We were laughing and joking. He came off stage. He held his left arm and he looked at me and said, "I think I'm dying," and he collapsed. And he went, our company manager, Basil Hopper, gave him mouth-to-mouth, and he was in a coma for 2 days. I went to see him. He squeezed my hand. He didn't wake, but he woke and talked to his mum and his sister on the 3rd of January, 1986. And then slipped away. And the result that then I had to go, okay, well, that rug's been pulled from under me. I've lost my best friend. He was my best friend at that time, absolutely, and my comedy partner. And I then went on stage the next day and had to prove to audiences that I could do it on my own. You know, I knew that I could because I'd always been a solo act for years and years. But I had to prove that I could go forwards. And that's why when I said that he left me with a legacy, he really did. He left me with that chance and that opportunity to show that I could do it. And Family Fortunes came along, and then that carried on for 15, 16 years. So.
Yeah. But you have had to, at points, completely recalibrate, reinvent, reconfigure, call it what you like. And it's exhausting to keep doing that. But also, it can be utterly thrilling because we live a long life now, or being well. Some people don't want to do the same thing from the age of sort of 18, 19, 20 till the day that they retire. You know, and I'm one of those people. I like to have a tapas career, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I like that. I don't want to eat the same sandwich every day. I don't want to do the same job every day. Do you know what I mean?
And that's what I've been lucky enough to do. And for a time I used to say, "Oh, jack of all trades, master of none." Mm. I think what I say is jack of all trades, master of some. So I do think that there are some that I have proved that I'm worthy of that position. I think we all have imposter syndrome in this business. It's so easy to doubt yourself. Ruthie and I were talking about that the other day. She's a wonderful, wonderful talent and a wonderful woman, but she's as insecure as we all can be at times. You should interview Ruthie. She's a great.
Absolutely. But you hear it in so many of the guests that come on here, and I say it myself, you know, and I think it gets to a stage where you've been doing it for decades, right? As have I, but you've got a few more decades on your CV than I have, Les. But after a while you start to think, well, maybe that for me is success now, the fact that I'm still able to do it.
Yeah.
I'm still here. That yeah. I'm not that awful that I've been kicked to the curb. And the audiences come to listen because I love what I do. And I think that's really important as well. People need to know that you love what you do in order
you
to come
do it
to it.
So well as well. You know, you got me through that journey today from Liverpool to here. I just went, oh, I want another one. So it's a wonderful podcast.
Thanks, Les. Les, thank you as always for talking to me. I never not enjoy our conversations. You are truly a lovely bloke and so many stories to share and tell. Thanks for sharing some with me today.
Thanks very much, Kate.
And so you're at Sadler's Wells at the moment, and then the tour goes out on the road around the UK, new cast.
In a couple of weeks, new cast, Sam Womack, Michael Praed, Faye Tozer, Ollie Farnworth, who played my son in Coronation Street. And we start in Canterbury in a few weeks, and then we go everywhere. We go all over.
So you're back living in digs, Les.
Premier in.
Don't forget, if you'd like to go and see Les in action, he could be playing in a town near you with 42nd Street, also starring Samantha Womack. You can get your tickets wherever you normally get your tickets. And if you're in the mood for more funny conversations with funny people who do it for a living, well, why not head to the back catalogue, where you'll find Russell Kane, Rob Brydon, Adam Hills and Al Murray. Oh, and don't forget, I'll be back on Tuesday with a brand new episode, a mini drop of our vintage cut, Something from the Cellar, where we revisit old conversations from fantastic guests, served to your feed every Tuesday afternoon, before I'm back next Friday with a brand new guest. Until then, thanks so much for listening.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with The Second Tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search Second Tier in your podcast app.
And hit subscribe.